Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back in. This is the Keystone Kickoff Show brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Dustin Hockensmith here. Joined now by Dennis Dodd, national college football writer from CBS Sports. He covers a lot of bigger picture stuff in college sports, which is why we wanted to talk to him today about NCAA rules. And Dennis, I know you're looking into Jordan McNair, the death of the Maryland offensive lineman. So I wanted to get your take on that, what you're finding out, and what questions still need to be answered.
Well, there are a lot of questions. I mean, we're talking about, by the way, the kid that, I think an offensive lineman died Wednesday, June 13th, in the hospital after collapsing at practice, I think May 29th, in a workout, T-shirts and shorts. I'd like to know what the cause of death is. We may never find out. I called some state offices in Maryland, and since he was in a hospital, no autopsy was performed, and when he died, I don't know why. A death certificate was issued, but according to the official I talked to, that death certificate per state law does not have to list the cause of death. So until that mystery is cleared up, if and when, then, you know, you just proceed. I don't know too many people, too many football players that had to be hospitalized and had a liver transplant and then died. So you can kind of surmise why it happened, so we don't know for sure yet.
Yeah, you know, you look back over the years, you can think of some tragic deaths that happen, heart conditions and those types of things. But this is a different kind of situation, especially with that, whatever it was, 10-day lag between when he was first hospitalized and now. I think it's fair game to try to get to the very bottom of how that happens to a young athlete who, you know, he's built, he trains for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if it is exertional, but even if it isn't exertional, heat stroke or heat exhaustion or something like that, it's really a scourge in college football that has come up every time something like this happens. Since 2000, 29 NCAA football players have died basically in T-shirts and shorts working out. Not in games, not in pads. The overwhelming majority have been like this. In the off-season, running gassers, in the heat, not properly prepared by the medical staff or the training staff for that sort of exertion. And it just, you know, we have Senate hearings over some of this other stuff, and why does this continue to go on? Now, again, I'm not going to make any presumptions till we know for sure, but if Jordan McNair died that way, he'd be the 30th such player in this century to go down like that.
Yeah, it's every time you have a young person of any kind, let alone an athlete, it's tough to see, it's tough to watch, especially if there might be a trend there. I wanted to talk to you about, you know, some of the changes the NCAA made last week, looking at the redshirt rule in particular. Kids can now play four games and still preserve their redshirt. I'm sure you've thought this through. And one of the first things I try to think about is, you know, how can this be exploited? What are unintended consequences of doing something like this? Have you wrapped your head around fully this issue and how you anticipate coaches might try to use this rule to their favor?
Well, this, for years, the coaches in general, I'm talking about the American Football Coaches Association. So the FBS coaches were in favor of this measure for 5 years of eligibility. Well, that was never going to happen because of the cost alone. You know, you'd be paying for an extra year of a scholarship, you know, times 130, you know, let's just say. So that was never going to pass. So they came across this, they kind of shortened it to this redshirt rule, which is fine. It allows you to play up to four games without using year of eligibility, you know, in case your roster is short and you need to elevate a guy and take off his red shirt, then he doesn't use a year of eligibility. And that's fine. I mean, it would have saved Shea Patterson another year of eligibility at Michigan or Ole Miss. So that's fair. What I suspect will happen is, because a lot of these bowl games just don't mean anything, coaches will treat them as exhibition games and load up with their freshmen and just play them a lot in those games and use it as a glorified practice, which look, a lot of these bowl games are anyway. I'm not going to make them to be something more than they are. This will be a very interesting bowl season, because I think we're going to see a lot of people in those games that we may have never seen before, or seen very little of.
Well, and it's an interesting dynamic, you saying so, with, you know, over half of college football able to play in bowl games, it might exaggerate, I guess, that trend of maybe too many teams playing in bowl games and too few bowl games that mean anything. And you add something like this to star players who maybe have had injury issues or whatever, who are skipping bowl games altogether. It could have an interesting effect when we do get to bowl season.
Well, and especially with, you know, I hate to be the banging this drum, but if head trauma is an issue, I don't know if more football is the answer, but I think that's a minor point. In this discussion, in the, you know, the one about there being too many bowl games, that train left the station a long time ago. Now we've got, what, three more bowl games waiting to be approved for 19. I think it's 84 spots I read. And so those bowl games that are starting up, I think, are in good shape. Myrtle Beach, Chicago, Wrigley Field, that's going to be sponsored by the Big Ten. It's going to be those, I think you're going to see market forces apply now, where bowls on the bottom end are, there's really going to be a lot of pressure financially for them to keep on existing. And so I think it'll balance itself out, that you'll see three or four bowls on the other end just cease to exist. You know, they don't make financial sense for the community or the people that sponsor them. So legally, there's nothing the NCAA can do about it. You know, basically, if 10 more cities wanted to sponsor bowl games, they would probably get approved, because if they didn't, the NCAA would be sued back to the Stone Age for an antitrust violation. So we're going to see more of this, but I think market forces apply now, where it's just going to take care of itself. Whatever the number is, 78, 84 spots, the market will take care of how many teams should be in.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much room for all these bowls to actually make money.
Yeah, too many 5 and 17s. We'll find that out really quick.
Yeah. I think we'll start to see more, especially with the three new games. We're talking to Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports here on the Keystone Kickoff Show, looking at the NCAA and the rule changes that they're making. We got into some bowl game discussion. The other part of the NCAA's announcement last week was the notion that an athlete has to seek and receive permission for the right to transfer. That's in addition to, if they're going from one FBS school to another, the 1 year penalty there. What's your take on this part of it? Is it overdue? I know that, you know, you've had some schools who are abiding by the rules, but they really look like the bad guy. And I'm not saying that they aren't in these situations when they block transfers, maybe from one SEC school to another. But what's your take on what this rule is going to accomplish?
It's way overdue, to the point that the NCAA Board of Governors kind of formed this transfer working group last year, and it's like the fourth such iteration of this group in the last 10 years. They haven't been able to accomplish anything. They were able to push through this little piece of legislation that at least allows players now to notify their schools and their coaches they're transferring, instead of seeking permission. You know, the stupid permission to contact, and schools with the ability to block players, and it was really Harry High School. If it's really about education, what does Nick Saban care about his backup center going to the Citadel? Because he blocked one of his players from going to the Citadel.
Yeah.
That's absolutely ridiculous. So coaches now are wringing their hands, saying this is going to be free agency. These kids can leave whenever they want. Well, not exactly. They still have to sit out. The names are going to be located in a portal, so there will be a list of players there. But I think that's more than fair when 37% of all students transfer at least once in their academic career, and college basketball coaches are losing their minds because 40% of incoming freshmen transfer by the end of their sophomore year. Well, that's just life, and they should be given that freedom. You know, frankly, I don't care about your roster management, and neither does the public. You know, at the end of the day, it's just going to be about wins. And I hear coaches complaining about, well, does this mean I'm going to have to coach different players? Yeah, well, maybe it does. You know, I don't know if that's such a bad thing. You know, when you have players dying in workouts, you know, for example.
Yeah.
So, no, it's a good thing. I didn't think it went far enough, but I think it's a sea change nonetheless compared to what we had.
I think, and I'm sure it's your experience, that college coaches can be a little overdramatic in these situations,
yeah.
But really, is the 1 year deterrent not the biggest factor in a kid's decision to transfer or not anyway. I think choice obviously is significant, but to say that this is going to usher in free agency just sounds ridiculous to me, especially whatever the number we said was 37% are going to transfer at some point in their careers anyway.
It is the biggest deterrent, and people forget that some unexplained reason there are only five sports that have that deterrent. Football, men's and women's basketball, hockey, and baseball. For some reason, and I think I know what it is, every other sport you can transfer right away. And I think I know what the reason is, because the five I mentioned are basically revenue sports.
Yeah.
And it means more. It's more important to the people who play and manage those sports. So, yeah, the year in residence is, you know, unless you get a waiver, is going to be the biggest deterrent. But, you know, but you will be able to, there is that freedom now. The biggest thing is it's freedom. You can transfer wherever you want. Not including whatever in-conference rules there are, and there are different rules for each conference.
Dennis, we got about a minute here. I just want to kind of big picture where you think the NCAA's image stands with the general viewing public, college football viewing public, whether common sense legislation like this improves their position, or just what's your sense on how people view the NCAA now?
Well, I think for decades it's been on the same. The brand has been on the same with what the IRS. You know, think of the things that make you cringe that have the most negative brand connotation there is. That's not changed. I think the walls are closing in. There's pressure to compensate players further. They're sticking by this antiquated amateurism rule, which is really the only one like it in the world. And, you know, how do you say a scholarship is enough? Again, when 29 players have died in 2000, how do you say a scholarship is enough when Oklahoma's starting quarterback this year, Kyler Murray, is going to be making $5 million? And the only reason he's allowed to do it is because he's being paid by a baseball team. The NCAA's defense or argument against that, and it came during the O'Bannon trial, was, well, you can't possibly have that. It would divide a locker room. Well, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. So we know that's not going to divide a locker room. In Oklahoma, he may lead him to a playoff. That's the only coin in the realm that matters. So there are any number of stress points and pressure points on the NCAA. It looks like the enforcement arm is going to change and be more independent, at least in major cases, which it should be. You shouldn't have brother judging brother. That causes all kinds of problems. I don't have to tell you, you know, guys there about Penn State. So the NCAA is going to have a very different look in the future. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be different.
Different is going to be good to a lot of people. That's Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports giving us the latest on the NCAA and some rule changes there. Thank you, Dennis.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We're moving on. Greg Pickle and I will take a stand on some Penn State football topics coming up right after this break. Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
160,000 miles. That's on average how often you'll use your car insurance. But what if you could get help with more often? Maybe save a couple of bucks on clothes or at restaurants. What if you could even get rescued roadside when a tire goes flat or your battery dies? You can, when you're a member and your auto insurance is AAA. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about how AAA works at every mile.
Hi, Dustin Hawkinsmith here from the Keystone Kickoff Show. Stop by Route 15 Beverage Express for the best selection of craft, domestic, and import beer in the area. Let our friendly and knowledgeable staff provide you with the best service in the area. And don't forget, June 23rd, we are saying thank you for 15 wonderful years of service. Stop by from noon to 4 for free food from 409 Tailgate Club, beer samples, and prizes just off Route 15 South in Dillsburg.